With another important feature from my morning radio show on KFNX in Phoenix, I'm Charles Goyette for AntiWar.com.
Matt Taibbi joins us again from Manhattan this morning. He's with Rolling Stone, has a great new piece about our senior snowy-haired senator from Arizona called McCain's Last Stand. Matt, good morning, sir.
What's going on, Charles?
Hey, tell me about your story about John McCain and Rolling Stone.
Well, you know, we're doing a series of profiles on all the Republican candidates, you know, leading up, you know, in the primary season. And McCain is somebody, you know, who actually had, we had a pretty positive piece about McCain once upon a time in the magazine. I guess it was but way back in 2000 before I was there. And we just sort of wanted to see where he was at, you know, heading into New Hampshire and Iowa. And, you know, I went and saw him, and he had just returned to South Carolina for his first big sweep through that state since his historic debacle there in 2004. And it was kind of a sad thing to see. He only visited VFW halls for the most part. And he looked like, you know, he had already given up, it seemed to me. His interest in going through this whole grueling campaign process, it just didn't seem to be there, you know, when I was visiting him.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that he sees the handwriting on the wall, and if he can't raise the money, and
I think so. I think, you know, he's had so many humiliations going into this campaign season. I mean, there was that notorious poll that you hear circulated everywhere. I mean, every group of reporters that I hang out with on the campaign trail, they all talk about the fact that McCain was outpolled by Barack Obama among Republican voters in Iowa. So I mean, that's devastating, and you know that kind of stuff. It just shows you it's really odd because, you know, McCain seems to be the candidate who has taken the brunt of the beating for his support of the Iraq War, despite the fact that all the Republican candidates have virtually an identical position on the war. It's just that McCain seems to be the one they're punishing for it. I think it's because he's the most unapologetic about it. I mean, the other candidates like Mitt Romney, they go through their stump speech and they just don't even mention the Iraq War. I mean, if you were watching his presentation, you almost wouldn't know that we were at war, whereas McCain just jumps right into it. I mean, that's the first thing he talks about, and it's pretty much the last thing he talks about when he's on his on the stump speech. So,
well, he's made himself a target too, I think, because of his enthusiasm for the war and his representations about you know, how easy it is to stroll into Starbucks in Baghdad for a double latte.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, he goes and he's surrounded by 500 guys, and he gets himself a carpet or something like that with Lindsey Graham in tow. And, you know, and then he says everything's fine. And, you know, people were saying that was his Dean Scream moment or whatever. But, you know, yeah, it's stuff like that. And then it's also stuff like the fact that he's calling himself one of the first critics of the war. Of course, his criticism is that we didn't send enough troops over there and that we, you know, haven't committed to it enough. But he's still trying to portray himself as a critic, which, you know, it plays into, again, another weakness of his is this perceived, you know, flip-flopping. You know, McCain, back in 2000, his real strength as a candidate was the fact that people thought he was, you know, a so-called straight shooter, a guy who was going to speak his mind and tell you what he thought. But by now, in 2008, he has the reputation of a guy who's going to go back on some of the things that he's said. You know, for instance, he once famously described Jerry Falwell as an agent of intolerance. And now, just yesterday, he's showing up at the Voters Values Conference in Washington with this conservative evangelical conference and trying to wrap his arms around every televangelist you could find in the room. And, you know, he's also broken bread with Falwell and spoken at Liberty University and that sort of thing. So I think all that stuff is starting to add up, and it's piling up, and it's burying his candidacy.
Well, he's talked at length many, many times about Weekend at Bernie's or whatever that movie was, and about propping Alan Greenspan up in the front seat of the car with him if he were president. I'm surprised that he didn't have Jerry Falwell propped up just like Bernie there.
Yeah, well, you know who he does have propped up with him a lot of times in the campaign trail is John Hagee. Do you know who that is?
Oh, we had him on the show. Oh, what a famous discussion we had.
What was your discussion about with Hagee about?
Oh, a little old
the end of the world.
Yeah, little old formalities like you know, whether the president can go to war if he wakes up with a wild hair or an apocalyptic nightmare on his own authority without consulting the Constitution. You won't be surprised to know that the the Right Reverend has a lot more regard for promiscuous warfare than he does for the United States Constitution.
Yeah, he's pretty enthusiastic about the whole war thing. He much prefers the Jesus of Revelation to the other sort of hippie, touchy-feely Jesus in the earlier parts of the New Testament. He's always talking about how, you know, he likes the Jesus who has the rod of iron and goes around, you know, punishing the recalcitrant sinners of the world. And so he thinks that, you know, going to war against Gog and Magog in Iran and Russia is a very good idea. You know, if you listen to his rhetoric, it's pretty creepy stuff. And the fact that John McCain has this guy, in tow all the time, I think it's a pretty weird thing. And it's kind of odd that it hasn't gotten more attention, it seems to me.
Well, here's an example of the straight talk express from Senator McCain.
There are neighborhoods in Baghdad where you and I could walk through those neighborhoods today.
And
yeah, right.
Jeez.
I mean, I was in Baghdad last summer. I was actually in the neighborhood where he went for his famous stroll. And, you know, we were told that you can't even stick your hand out the window of the Hummer. I mean, that's, you know, it's there's no place in Baghdad where you were an American can safely walk around. That's ridiculous. Maybe in Kurdistan, but I think that's a very disingenuous thing for him to say. But he's no stranger to those kinds of comments. That's for sure.
All right. Well, by the way, speaking of the Pastor Hagee, maybe we can let you hear about this little exchange about he who must never be questioned, which would be General Petraeus. Let me let you hear our exchange about the general who must never be questioned.
Would you say that the commander, General Petraeus, knows what's going on?
I say that General Petraeus is a political appointee who has hitched his star to political success, who envisions himself, you're not getting this from me, by the way, who would like to see himself President of the United States.
You got to be kidding.
No, I'm not. Shall I give you chapter and verse on it?
United States for 35 years. If he's going to be a politician, he's certainly waiting late in the game to be one.
Well, so did Dwight Eisenhower. He's singularly insulated from the reality of what's going on if he doesn't realize that Petraeus is a political appointee. After the Joint Chiefs didn't think that the surge was a good idea, and they had to find somebody who did, they settled on Petraeus, who, by the way, has not been shy, Matt, to reveal his presidential aspirations. But then there was another exchange with the Right Reverend warmonger about presidential war-making authority.
You are quite expressive in your opinions about funding for war and what the Congress should do with respect to this, that, and the other issue, and I wonder why you're reluctant to say that an act of war in Iran would require a declaration of war as provided for by the Constitution. I want to move on to more productive ground myself, but I'm surprised that you're dancing around this in this manner.
Constitutional action.
I beg your pardon?
I did not say having a military preemptive strike against Iraq would require a constitutional
action. You're confusing Iraq and Iran now.
Pardon me?
You just confused Iraq and Iran.
We do not have a war declaration for Iraq, and neither does the president need one to expand it into Iran.
Okay, that's the answer I was looking for. You know, he can do it on his own authority.
He certainly can. We're in Iraq on his authority.
There you go, right, Matt?
Yeah, well, that's great, right? So this is the guy that McCain is toting around with him. I mean, that's kind of scary, you know? I mean, technically, you never know. There is that view in the Republican circles that the authorization that Congress already gave Bush for Iraq covers Iran, too. But, you know, you certainly don't want to be hearing that at this point. I think that's pretty scary stuff.
Well, despite the fact that they had some enchiladas together at the Teepee Tap Room down the street here, you would have a hard time believing that there is any love between McCain and Bush. McCain was treated pretty ill at the hands.
Yeah.
But so I have to assume that his being the point man in defense of Bush's elective war is because he likes the war. It's not because he has any particular love for Bush.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you follow McCain around and you listen to the way he talks about the war, I really think that his experience in Vietnam is what's guiding him here. I mean, when you listen to him talk about how you have to give the soldiers a chance to finish the job, he's very emotional about it, and it really rings true. Like this is a real feeling that he has. That I think, you know, as a in the military, I mean, you're trained to believe that you can do anything, you can accomplish anything. And there's this attitude among some of the soldiers that, you know, by telling them that we have to pull out now, that it's some kind of indictment on their performance. And, you know, a lot of people who are veterans of Vietnam, you know, feel like, you know, we didn't give enough, give the war enough of a chance to succeed despite how long we were there and despite the fact that that's not really the reason we pulled out. But I think that's exactly what he's thinking here with Iraq, that this is somehow some kind of indictment against the armed services. And as a former POW, I think that's what's guiding him here. And you can tell that because that's, you know, everywhere he goes, he's always talking to war veterans and especially Vietnam veterans, and he's always making that comparison. So I think that's what's going on with this. As for him supporting George Bush, I mean, there's no possible reason that he would have to do anything for Bush after what happened in South Carolina in 04, you know, where they were, you know, circulating flyers saying that he had an illegitimate black child and that his wife was a, you know, pill-popping maniac and that he had gone crazy in a POW camp in Vietnam. I mean, all that stuff is, you know, unforgivable. So there can't be any other explanation as far as I'm concerned.
Well, hang on a minute, Matt. Matt Taibbi's with us this morning from Rolling Stone magazine. The piece is McCain's Last Stand. When it comes to Iraq, the Arizona senator remains a prisoner of Vietnam, bravely taking a bullet for a commander-in-chief who betrayed him. But when we continue, Matt, I want to ask you about your querying of McCain, for example, about his position, you know, that if we don't fight them over there, they're going to come over here. We'll talk about that next this morning here on the Charles Goyette Show. Matt Taibbi's with us from Rolling Stone magazine, a piece about Senator John McCain and his primary. Matt joins us by telephone from Manhattan. So, Matt, you got a chance to visit with Senator McCain in South Carolina, as well as a number of his supporters, and they're great anecdotes. Tell me about your questioning McCain about some of his representations.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the first thing is that when I was listening to his speech, one of the things that he says is that all objective sources agree that the surge is working in Iraq. And it was funny when he first said that, I had just that morning read a poll that said that 70% of all Iraqis think that their lives have gotten worse since the surge started. So I asked him, I said, you know, you say that all credible sources, you know, agree that this is working, and, you know, here's this poll result, so are the Iraqi people not objective? And he says, his answer is, well, I was talking about the people who are on the ground. And so, you know, I'm thinking to myself, are they all jumping, or, you know, what's the deal here, you know? You know, and then also he has this thing, this line that you know, is sort of a pablum of the, you know, Rush Limbaugh talk circuit, which is that we have to fight them over there or else they're going to come over here. And, you know, everybody I talked to in South Carolina, they seem to give that answer. And I said, well, what is it about that we're, how are we actually preventing them from coming over here? You know, can't they just come here anyway? And his answer was, well, we're preventing them from setting up bases like we're doing in Afghanistan. And I said, you know, well, we're not talking about Afghanistan. We're talking about Iraq. And he says, well, you know, General Petraeus agrees that this is now the central battle in the war on terror. And I'm like, yeah, but how does that prevent them from coming over here? And he's like, you know, next question. He moves on. And I think this is an example. I mean, John McCain knows very well that this is sort of a meaningless thing to say. It sounds good. It sounds like it makes sense. But it doesn't make any sense at all, really. But it's one of those things that he knows is going to go over with crowds. So he puts it out there. And, you know, I think that's another example of the kind of thing that has detracted from his straight talk reputation, it seems to me.
How long before he goes the way of whatever that guy's name is from Kansas, Brownback?
Well, you know, this is all about raising money. I mean, at this stage of the campaign, you have to meet certain targets, or else your supporters are gonna bail on you. And I would imagine he's gonna hang in there through the first round of primaries and see how he does, because he's not completely out of it. I mean, he's doing, you know, there are some polls that show that he's gaining in New Hampshire. And he's still well thought of in that state. You know, I went around and I've been in New Hampshire a lot this fall, and he does have a lot of supporters there. But if he places lower than second in both Iowa and New Hampshire, I'm sure he's going to be out then, seems to me.
There are people in the media here in Phoenix that will tell you, Matt, to nobody's surprise, that McCain has not only a short fuse but a long memory. And I wonder where George Bush might figure in his in his memoir.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's got a lot of stuff. I mean, for him to step up and give that speech in support of Bush in 2004 at the convention, that was the most shocking thing of the last election. I don't think anybody really expected him to do that, and that just showed you how badly he wanted to stay in the game and have another shot at the presidency. But if he loses this time around and he's out of it, one would expect that he's going to tell that whole story in South Carolina, and that there might be a few other things that he might talk about. He's famously sort of bent and cooperated with the Bush administration so many times in the last 8 years, in spite of what you might think, you know, especially on that, the Military Commissions Act, the so-called torture bill, which is something that McCain really felt strongly about and went into that bill promising that he would not compromise on, you know, at all.
Yeah, right.
And ended up completely gutting the bill before passing it. And, you know, the look on his face, I was there the day they passed that thing in the Senate. And he looked like a guy who was completely crestfallen by the entire experience and that it really hurt him to do that. And I would imagine that all these things are going to stick in his craw, and he should have a few things to say about it once he leaves office.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much for being with us this morning on our radio program, making yourself available. I hope you get to a couple of more of these guys in the Republican primaries that we can call on you to share some insights with. Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone magazine, rollingstone.com.
For Antiwar Radio on antiwar.com, I'm Charles Goyette.